Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your guest today, Marvin Smith. Alan will not be with us today because he's out in the field, as one might say, doing the good works of intervention. So, but you know what they say in show business? The show goes on. So I'm here as your guest, the co-host. Each week, this show will bring you guests that will inspire, educate, and in some cases, outright entertain you, while bringing you answers and options to raising children today in our constantly changing future. We will address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. It is our goal to bring you top professionals in many of the helping fields and authors sharing valuable stories and helpful information who are working to keep your family and my family mentally, physically, and spiritually sound. And as I would like to say, make this world a better place for all of us. We will continue to bring you some of these incredible, talented, and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. Once again, I'm your host today, Marvin Smith. Our guest today, I'm really excited. I had a chance to go through some excerpts and read some information, and I think this is a topic matter that we're all, as parents, and not even parents, parents-to-be, grandparents, are going to be interested to hear. And our guest today is Patty Fitzgerald. Patty is the founder of Safely Ever After. It's an educational organization dedicated to keeping our kids safe with empowering and effective programs that really work. Now, listen to what I just said, that really work. There are a lot of programs out there, but do they all work? That's another story. But anyway, Patty is recognized as a national expert in the field of childhood sexual and abuse prevention education, as well as abduction prevention. As a child safety educator, Patty is also the former child visitation monitor and preschool teacher. For over 14 years, she has worked tirelessly as a children's advocate, blending her expertise as an educator and as a mom to teach parents, children, her effective, non-fearful, safe smarts curriculum, which is now used throughout the country. Admired for her positive approach, Patty is also the author of two highly acclaimed children's books, No Trespassing, This Is My Body. I like that. Back off. This is my body. No trespassing. Anyway, and Super Duper Safety School. She has been featured on Good Morning America, CNN, MSNBC, as well as countless national and local news programs. Patty, it is with great pleasure I say, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Hi, thank you, Marvin, for having me. Thank you for such a nice introduction, too.
Hey, well, nice introduction. I always say, call it the way it is, you know. So, you know, don't have to be humble there. If you're doing great works, just continue to do the good works. And I'm all about kids and children. And as an educator myself, they need to be safe, and we need to know how to keep them safe. And as I was going through your information, Patty, you know, say programs at work. So I think we're gonna have a good show today, and looking to hear more from you as we go further. But before we proceed. As I was kind of going through your bio, and as it says, mm-hmm. a former child visitation monitor. I have an idea what that is, but maybe you might want to explain to our listeners what that is. I mean, without sure. guessing.
Sure. A child visitation monitor is someone who monitors visits with a non-custodial parent and their child. For whatever reason, if there's one parent and the court deems it necessary for that parent to be supervised while they are spending time with their child, then I used to be the visitation monitor, which meant that I was present during that visitation and making sure that the child felt safe and that everyone was acting appropriately and that there was nothing unsafe going on with the child, or that the non-custodial parent didn't take off with the child and kidnap the child or something. So it's a tough job, but yes, it's one that's really necessary.
I guess it could be very emotional as well. I mean, kind of like you're standing in the gap, you know, and for the best interest of the child.
Exactly, and that non-custodial parent is usually not happy to see a visitation monitor. It's for a lot of reasons, they're not happy about that. So, it's a tough spot to be in.
Well, thank you for giving us that information. Now, I have I'm looking at my list. I have a bunch of questions I would like to ask you, and you know, and I know I'm looking at some of the questions, and we could probably spend an hour on one question, but, you know, want to try to get as much information as possible to our listeners. And so try to go through this list, and you can give us your, you know, best scenarios on how you feel about these issues. So, number one, I mean, explain why stranger danger is a myth. Why telling kids not to talk to stranger doesn't work. I mean, come on, okay. Patty. Are you sure? Jeff, I tell my kid, don't talk to strangers. They're going to do it anyway.
Exactly. Now, there's a lot of different reasons why stranger danger doesn't work. So I'm going to rattle off several.
Okay.
The first is there are millions of people in the world who are strangers, and most of them are not unsafe. So teaching children to be fearful of strangers is not a great idea. The second reason is our children see us talking to strangers all the time. So it's a rule that doesn't make sense to them. They see us talking to strangers at the grocery store, at the bank, walking down the street while you're waiting in line at an amusement park. And so when we tell our kids don't talk to strangers, children have a different interpretation of what a stranger is. You know, it's not somebody friendly, and so it simply doesn't make sense. But
right.
The most important reason why stranger danger doesn't work is because 90% of sexual abuse happens to children by someone that they know or that the family knows. And so when we're only talking about strangers, we're missing a huge portion of vulnerability in how a child can be abused or victimized.
Right.
So stranger danger simply doesn't work for all of those reasons.
And, you know, the other thing I can add to that as well,
you know,
Patty.
I'm sorry. Well, kids just think a stranger looks mean and scary.
Right.
And even in those off chances when a stranger is trying to victimize a child, say that stranger at the park, that stranger will not appear in a fearful manner. That stranger will appear friendly and enticing, so the stranger danger radar in the child doesn't even kick in when it should kick in. So there you have it. Tons
right.
of reasons why stranger danger doesn't work.
Well, you know, and as you're sharing and as I'm listening, I think of, you know, in the world of psychology, we use the term behavior modeling. And when you talk about young brains and young minds and kids who are not fully developed, you always say, it's one thing to say something, but from a behavior modeling standpoint, there it's what they see. And I can recall when my daughter was very young, I was in a store and I was talking to someone. She goes, "Dad, do you know that person?" I go, "No, I just met him." And she goes, "Really? I thought he was your friend." I go, "Well, no, he might be my friend now. I don't know." And you know, so using that as an example, and then we get in the car and she goes, "Wow, you know everybody, huh?" You know, so you're right. It needs to be more than just not telling them, but that whole modeling process as well. So thank you.
I'm so glad you said that. You're right on the money there. I'm surprised she didn't say to you, "Dad, why are you talking to that person? That's a stranger." Because that's very often what kids will say when they're in a situation like that.
Right. So that's good. Now, on your site, you state that 90% of child sexual abuse occurs by someone the family knows. How often? Yeah. Now, how are these numbers calculated? And how do we differentiate between abuse and discipline? Now, because I want to say one point before you go forward on the discipline side or abuse. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Well, my daughter, my youngest daughter again, who's now 21, she had commented about they were teaching her in school about, you know, abuse of parents. And if your parents touch you, then you call the police and so forth and so on. And so this was kind of running rampant. And there were a lot of calls at some point, you know, maybe 10 years ago, where 15 years ago, where these calls were going out from kids telling on their parents and on abuse. And I remember she says, and jokingly, this was all jokingly, though. She goes, "Dad," I said something to her. She says, "I'm going to call the police on you." And I go, you're going to do what? "I'm going to call the police. If you do such and such, I'm calling the police." I said, "Really?" She goes, "Yeah." I said, "Oh, okay." I said, "Okay, well, how are you going to call them if you're asleep?" And she goes, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, when I knock you out and you're asleep, when they come here, you can't." She said, "You wouldn't do that, would you, Dad?" I said, "You wouldn't call the police, would you?" but it was all jokingly. But it's just how things can get taken out of context. So this is. So I'd like for you to expound on that whole 90%.
Okay. Well, the first part, the 90% of sexual abuse or physical abuse that happens by someone the child or the family knows, that statistic is compiled by national agencies, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and a think tank called the Crimes Against Children Research Center. And they take all of the reported crimes against children and compile that, and that statistic, that 90% of abuse is from someone the child knows, comes from those law enforcement reports.
Okay.
And crimes. And convictions. And that's important.
Yes.
To note. And the other thing or issue that you're talking about, the difference between abuse and discipline.
Yes.
Well, abuse, if we're talking about sexual abuse, obviously it's using a child in any sexual manner whatsoever. So, of course, physically touching a child in their private parts, or asking a child to touch you in your private parts. Obviously, that's sexual abuse.
But
showing pornography to a child would be considered sexual abuse or exploitation. Asking a child to do something to another child while someone else watches. So there are a lot of different examples of what sexual abuse is. In terms of physical abuse, and this gets into a gray area, because then you get into people saying, "Well, don't I have the right to spank my child or not?" And personally, I'm not in favor of spanking, but I know that there are parents who do spank. What's the difference between that and abuse? If it leaves a mark,
okay.
If it is demeaning, obviously, if it's harming the child or injuring the child where medical care is needed, where, you know, you have to take the child to the doctor or the emergency room, using any kind of an object. So, you know, even using a belt. I know that that was something that was, you know, in the 60s when I grew up, you used to hear about that all the time.
Yes.
You better watch out, or so-and-so is going to get the belt on you. That is considered physical abuse. So there is that fine line there. The problem that I have with abuse and or discipline in terms of the spanking and all of that is that one of the most important things that our children need to know is that they are what I call the boss of their bodies, so that if someone else touches them in any overpowering way, they know they have the right to say, "Back off," the way you mentioned earlier. And when we spank, or if we physically discipline our children in a very harmful way, or in a very powerful way, what we're really telling that child is someone bigger and more powerful than you has the ability or the right to do what they want, and you don't have the right to say stop or knock it off. And so again, it's kind of a murky message. When, you know, at one point we're telling our kids, you have the right to say stop, hands off, and then we're saying, you know, well, but it's okay if somebody, you know, spanks you or hits you or disciplines you in a very overpowering way. So again, it's a little murky.
Yeah, I would agree. It's a gray area. And I mean, as you mentioned early, when you first started to talk about the subject, it's like, you know, the 60s, the belt and things of that nature. And I look at how we even train a child, you know, within a family on the discipline side has changed over time. Even in education, it has changed over time, how we deal with discipline and this whole thing about engagement versus being punitive. And it's like I said, it's interesting. And I think as a society, we have to continue to grow in our strategies and understanding what works and what doesn't. I'm enthralled with the neuroscience part of the world about there's so much more that we know today that works. I think I said early on about the programs that you have created, programs that work. And there's a lot of things that have not worked, and people continue to stand by them for all the wrong reasons. So, you know, when I think about, you know, what you're sharing, it is a gray area. But as we continue and having individuals like yourself to give clarity going forward is all great information. Thank you for that. And I think last thing I want to share on that is I remember when I was a kid, you know, we have great memories. Two things happen. If, as you said earlier, if someone's bigger and stronger, what we're doing, I think cognitively, we're setting up a stage for adult abuse, where now you have husband and wives, where you have the subservient type of mentality, where you hear about women who have been abused by men, physically abused in relationships, and they won't get out because something was set in stone early on in their age and life that it's in, even though it's crazy as it sounds, it's okay, but it's not.
Right. It's not, but it's their familiarity and it's what they've learned. It's learned behavior. And so if someone's abusing them as a child, when they grow up, it just seems like this is normal behavior. My husband should hit me, or I should be sexually abused by a boyfriend, a relative, because that's just how life is. It's that learned response. So you're absolutely right.
Yes,
but it's different. Again, it's really not, I guess, part of what you want to talk about. But you know, a swat on the bottom is one thing. You know, a little spank on the bottom is one thing. But when we start talking about, you know, pulling a child's arm, slamming them up against the wall to show some kind of force or power, or you know, doing something along those lines, that's much different than.
Then physically,
slapping a kid on the hand and saying, "Don't touch the hot stove." That's a whole lot different.
Well, even like my grandkids, I'm at a point where, you know, when you kind of understand what the whole thing is to get their attention. I mean, I think that's the biggest issue. It's not so much the act of what you're doing, that spanking. It's what's the attention. So I even look at my grandkids. I can raise my voice and they start crying, and I can act and ramp and rave, I did the job. I don't have to touch them, but as far as they know, there's something's not right. So, you know, there are ways of handling and dealing with the situation. So,
And then the parent can get down on their knees and look the child in the eyes and get their attention in that way as well. You know, look at them immediately and say, "This is why this is not working right now."
Right.
Get that child to stop and redirect on and focus on what you're saying.
Well, and I think the other part that I believe becomes the issue, you know, I think of any new product that you buy today, there's always an owner's manual, how to operate. But when we became a parent, when that child was born, the doctor didn't go, "Here, parents, here's your manual on this particular child. If you follow these steps, it will surely work." It's not like that. And we're talking about human behavior. So it's, you know, a lot of things we do, it was either we learned or it was caught in our development of growth, or we mm-hmm. just wanted to become better parents. You know, it's, but it's not, there's nothing, there's no clear state of what parenting is. And we're always looking at examples. What is good parenting? You know, so I do a lot of work with parents. And but I can recall when I was a kid, you know, I reverend my parents, as I might say. I was in fear of my parents, because if the teacher was to call home and said, "I'm calling your parents," I said, "Please don't do that." You know, no, please. Now you have kids. I'm calling your parents. Call them. Just yeah. ahead, call them. I won't bring them here. We'll see who's going to get in trouble, buddy. I'm like, oh my God. You know, so it's changed over time.
Yeah, it's changed a lot. Sometimes you hear that. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, you know, as my dad would say, "Hey, buddy, hey, I brought you in, I'll take you out." You know.
Yeah, my father used to say something similar. Yeah,
so you can look back. But anyway, I'm okay today. I mean, it's whatever it was, whatever fear that was put in my heart, it kept me on the straight and narrow. So, Well, you talk about being aware of tricky people. You know, this is kind of interesting. Okay. Describe, you know, a very real and empowering things that we can talk about to kids to lessen risk, including teaching kids and parents to be more aware of these type of what's called tricky people.
Right. Okay. Now this is, we're really getting into it now. And I think this is so important for parents. The first is, if you understand that most of the time it's somebody you know in your family or family circle, familiar circle, then when you start to swap out the stranger danger talk and start telling kids, watch out for tricky people who make you feel yucky, tricky people who break our family safety rules, tricky people who make you or ask you to do things that feel icky. Once we start talking to kids about tricky people, and as parents watching out for tricky people, we're actually using a system that works, because you're not basing it anymore on, you know, do I know them or not know them? Right. Is it a stranger or not? Or what they look like. We're basing it not on what a person looks like, but rather what they say or want to do.
Right.
And the reason tricky people works for parents and for kids is because it covers all of your bases. It covers people you know, people you don't know, people you know a little bit. So tricky person can be Uncle Creepy, Cousin Yucky. It can be your next door neighbor who is always looking to separate you from your child with all kinds of charm and attention and doing favors for you. A tricky person can be someone you know just a little bit, like the ice cream man that you see at the park every few days, and he invites your child into the truck to sell ice cream with him for the day. And he's made your child that favorite kid at the playground. So tricky people act a certain way. And if you think of it in that way, it's the same thing as when we were taught you can't judge a book by its cover.
Right.
Not what somebody looks like. It's what they say or want to do. Parents need to watch out for tricky people, and we need to teach kids about watching out for tricky people. And that tricky people is connected to what I call my super duper safety rules, my super 10 safety rules for kids and families. So you combine the idea of tricky people with some very simple family safety rules that are in kid language. And when somebody breaks the rules, that's a tricky person. We don't want to be around them. So that's the beginning of what tricky people, what that concept is, and how you work with that concept. And continuing on with that, if you go to my website, and I think I sent them as well, the Super 10 Safety Rules for Kids and Grown-Ups is what lays out the foundation of what's okay and not okay and how tricky people break those rules.
So let me ask you this. Is it possible that you could maybe just kind of rattle off those 10 rules?
Absolutely. Okay. The 10 rules are, number one, I am the boss of my body, which means that everybody, whether you're an adult or a kid, owns their own body and has the right to say, stop touching me. Number two is, I know my name, address, and parents' cell phone number. very important that kids know that, especially once they get into school or, heaven forbid, if they get lost at, you know, Target or Dodger Stadium.
Right.
Number three is one of my favorite rules, and it works for young kids and it works for older kids, like my teenage daughter. Number three is safe grown-ups don't ask kids for help when you're by yourself. And what that really means, when we teach young kids, we simply teach them the helping rule. It's okay to help mom or dad in the house when we tell you to clean up your room. But if you're out in the world, people who ask you for help finding a lost pet, asking you to come close to their car to take a package or a mail a letter for them or directions, safe adults don't ask kids for assistance. Adults ask other adults. But it's one of the oldest tricks in the book, asking a kid for help. So even if my neighbor, Mr. Creepy, asks my daughter to come in and help him clean out his garage, my daughter needs to know, before I go helping anybody, I'm going to have to check first.
Right.
And get permission. And so number three is the helping rule. Number four is not going anywhere or taking anything from someone that you don't know, no matter how friendly they are. But number five is also one of my favorite rules, especially for young kids, and that's check first and get permission before you go anywhere, do anything, take something, even if it's from someone you know. Check first with your grown-up.
Yes.
So check first basically means if Uncle Creepy says, let's run to the store because we need more ice cream for the party.
Check first.
My kid says to me, I'm going to check first.
Yes.
If Mr. Neighbor says, come in the house for a snack and to play with the puppy, the kid has to check first. So that's number five. Number six is everybody's bathing suit areas are private. Mm. And my recommendation is that you call them the anatomically correct words for body parts. You use those words with children because it's very clear. But the rule is privates are private. And that's right. What I teach children in my classes in a very simple way. We just yell out, my privates are private. And if anyone breaks that rule, then the boss of their body, that's them, gets to say, hands off my private parts or back off my private parts. Number seven is they should not have to be too polite if someone makes them uncomfortable or feel scared. So if an adult is giving them that scary uh-oh feeling, they don't have to be super nice just because that person's an adult telling them to do something. It also means we shouldn't force our kids to hug and kiss every smelly relative at the family reunion. They shouldn't have to be too polite. Of course, we want nice children. We don't want rude, obnoxious brats. But if they're getting an uh-oh feeling or someone's asking them to break a rule, they don't have to be too polite and do what that other person says. Number eight is no secrets from my parents, especially a secret that involves my body. So if anybody says any kind of secret, here's a secret gift, don't tell your parents. This is a secret touch because we're special friends. That's not okay. So no secrets from my parents. Very important. Number nine, if you ever get lost in a public place, a child should stop right where they are and yell out for their parent or their grown-up or ask another mom with kids for help. Instead of telling your kid, look for the security guard, look for a policeman, which is very confusing and most of the time not around, statistically the safest person for a child when they're lost or vulnerable is to ask another mom with kids. Oh. That's the least risky choice. So that's number nine. And number 10 is for grown-ups and kids. I always listen to my uh-oh feeling. That's your instinct. And yes, it's the best barometer for when something is not okay. Oh. So I base all of my workshops for children on these rules. And I just call them the Super 10 safety rules for kids and grown-ups because both kids and grown-ups need to know them. There you go. That's kind
good.
Of a long-winded explanation.
No, that was good.
Super 10 rules.
That was really good. I mean, the 10, like you say, the Super 10 safety rules. And, you know,
Patty, I think this is a great segue into a break real quick, a commercial break. And then we'll come back. We'll pick up for the last half of the show and a few more questions. And I have some some listener questions, some call-in questions that I would like to entertain at the end of the show and get your input, if that's okay with you. Okay, hold on for 1 second.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
Well, we are back to Answers for the Family. Once again, I'm your host, Marvin Smith. And our guest today is Patty Fitzgerald. And she just basically read off or shared the super duper... I'm ad-libbing here, Patty. Okay, she just shared the Super 10 safety rules that all kids and parents must know. Well, welcome back, Patty.
Right, thanks. Hi.
Yes. Okay, as we're going forward, I have another question here. Is it true that it takes less than a minute for a predator to lure a child away from the environment?
Yes. It is absolutely true. And whether that is a stranger or a tricky person that you know, it doesn't take long to charm a child with an enticing trick or lure if your child doesn't know what to do when they're confronted with something interesting and tricky. So, yes, that is absolutely true.
Okay, well, you know, this is great because I have a listener question that ties right into that question. Let me read it off and you know, get your thoughts. It says, I was in Macy 3 weeks ago when I heard a woman loudly calling out for her daughter. 10 minutes later, I saw three security guards by the door arresting an old man. I got as close as I could to overhear the mother hysterically talking to her husband on the phone saying, that man had taken our child, who was maybe three tops, in a dressing room, changed her clothes, and was trying to sneak her out without being noticed. There has not been any word about this on the news. Interesting. But she goes, for parents with children this age, what would be your advice to protect them from pet predators?
Okay. So in that case, it was a stranger, and you know, that is still a very real concern. So when they're out and about at Macy's or whatever, my first advice is to, whether you're trying to close on or what, your child needs to be within eyesight of you. So keep your eye on your kid. Because if you're keeping your eye on your kid, you'll also be keeping an eye on anybody who approaches them. The other part of that is, again, check first. So let's say you turn your back for 20 seconds, which happens. If your child is approached by somebody who says, let's go here or let's go there, your child knows, wait a minute, I got to check first, and runs to mom and says, hey, mom, I want to go out there because this guy has something really fun. So check first. If they are grabbed or if there's anybody who gives them that scary feeling, kids should know to use their outside voice immediately and say, I need help. This is not my dad. So we can teach kids to be loud. because when a child is loud, it scares the tricky person off. They're like an alarm going off. That's another thing you can tell your child when you're out and about with them. Something else that I think is a great thing to keep kids safe when you're out there in the world, kids get bored when mom's trying on clothes or you're shopping and it's a boring task. You've got to involve the child in staying near you. Otherwise, they are going to wander or hide or whatever. So make it a game. You can only be 3 giant steps away from mom while we're at Target, and you constantly reinforce that game. 3 giant steps so I can reach you and you can reach me. It can be a little exhausting, but when you have your child's buy-in, they're less likely to go wandering off or be tricked by somebody, and it's a great way to keep the supervision tight.
Right. Well, let me ask you this then. Then at what age can we teach very young children important safety rules and skills? You know, because that listening to what you just shared, I am a parent. Cause I'm a mom. I'm at the mall, and I have my little one varying in age. And so, what's the youngest age? Or you know, okay.
Well, as soon as kids are able to converse and are somewhat articulate and they're talking and listening, and that's usually around the age of 3. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean you can teach your child everything at age 3, but you can start to introduce some safety concepts or rules, and then you expound on them as they grow. So those Super 10 safety rules, you know, you pick 1 or 2 when your child's 3, 3.5, 4, when you're going out, you find a teachable moment, like when we're going to grandma's house or when we're going to Macy's or wherever. But you can start with that language and those rules around 3.5.
Around 3.5, yes.
You know, one of the other things I like to do with kids is I do a lot of thumbs up and thumbs down. I put my thumbs up for something okay and my thumbs down for something not okay, because even young children understand that concept.
Right.
It just makes sense to them. So, again, when they're very young, you're using those concepts that make sense to the child, and that's why they work, because you're not saying, don't run away, don't talk to strangers.
Yes. I'm a very visual person. And, you know, as you're sharing, I'm visualizing concepts and thoughts and things that you share. But I recall one time I was at a mall, and there was a young mother. She had like 3 small kids. They're small as they could. One started walking, maybe 3, 4. But they were all connected with a little rope, right, or a leash, right?
Yeah.
And it connect. And then she had one to her around her wrist, which was a little longer, so they could play a little bit. And, you know, you look at that, they're like, that's almost like having animals on a, you know, I heard somebody kind of whisper, like, oh, that's kind of inhumane. But in thinking about it, I mean, to still give kids freedom and movement and to still keep them connected, that's really was a great concept.
I think it's a great concept, too, and it's so frustrating when you hear people say, don't treat your child like a dog. You're really not. I mean, unless you're calling your kid Fido, you're really not treating him like a dog. What you are doing is exactly what you said, Marvin, and that is you are giving them a little freedom so that they can walk around and explore while not getting lost.
Right.
And when I was a preschool teacher, we didn't have those types of harnesses or tethers, but what we did have when we went on trips with the kids was a rope with a knot in it, or several knots, and each kid held on to the rope and a knot, and we called it our daisy chain, and that's how we kept kids close by without wandering off, especially little kids
little
if you're
kids.
Out on a field trip. So, you know, you make a little daisy chain, or you use those cute little backpack harnesses that,
yes,
you know, are for kids now, and they're little monkey backpacks, and they have a little tether for mom to hold on. And your kid actually has more freedom, and you can relax a little bit.
Right, exactly.
I think they're a great idea.
Yes, that's good. Well, let me ask you this then. How can parents recognize the grooming tricks and red flag warning signs of a would-be predator before they're victimized, before they victimize a child? I mean, what's
right.
You know,
yeah,
I was always, I would always say I would prefer prevention versus intervention.
That's right. I love that you said that. I'm about prevention instead of damage control afterwards.
Yes.
So you're so right. Prevention is more important. And the interesting thing is, when a parent understands how a tricky person works and what those red flag warning signs are, you can spot them rather quickly and you can intervene before it moves into molestation or abuse. Grooming is phase one. A molester needs two things. They need access and private time with their intended victim.
Mm-hmm.
And the grooming tricks are intended to gain more and more access or privacy. So it's not what somebody looks like, it's what they do. If they are trying to arrange alone time with the child with lots of reasons or excuses which exclude you, pay attention to that person. Why are they doing that? What are they looking for? In plain English, pay attention to who's paying attention to your kid. If there's someone who is repeatedly befriending your child and lavishing them with expensive gifts or attention or praise, ask yourself if it makes sense.
Right.
If grandma says, I want to take my grandchild to the movies for her birthday on Saturday, that makes sense.
Right.
If Coach Sandusky says, I want to take one kid to the movies on Saturday because he's my favorite, that does not make sense.
That
and
make
that's
sense.
Where you have to draw the line. Because a predator is charming, and little by little, they gain more and more access and privacy until they have their victim right where they want them. Somebody who is offering to help you out, babysitting for free, giving free lessons, transporting your child for free. Somebody who's very physical with a child when the child doesn't like it. A lot of too much hugging, kissing, tickling, wrestling, lap sitting. Somebody who has no age-appropriate relationship. So if Uncle Creepy is 30 years old and all he wants to do is hang out with the 13-year-old, keep an eye
wrong
on Uncle Creepy at Thanksgiving dinner.
Yes.
If somebody's just preoccupied with your child, oh, they're my favorite. They're so perfect, so beautiful, so wonderful. They treat that child like they're older than they really are. Somebody has just no boundaries of their own, emotional or physical boundaries. So, again, there are several red flag grooming tricks or warning signs. And when you recognize them, the parent or the caretaker can jump in and go, wait a minute, no access, no privacy with this person and my child.
That's good. I'm sitting here listening to you. I'm going, I'm not going to trust anybody at this point.
And that's not okay. I don't want you to do that. I don't want
you to
think you can't trust anybody, because the truth is most people in the world are not molesters, and you have to use common sense. So
yeah.
I always say to parents, start with the idea that most people are not molesters, but a person who does want to molest someone, a child, is going to be looking for access and privacy. And
right.
That's your first clue.
And which basically, so what you're, and basically
a,
what you're,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I said basically what you're saying, as I say, taking in context what you're sharing, is like, it's an anomaly of something out of the norm. It's just that something that sticks out, and and like you said, your intuition, all these things, all these red lights, these things start going off, and you know, because it's not normal.
Right. Right. And that's it. Your intuition tells you something's not quite right here. It's okay if your soccer coach really likes your kid, but when your soccer coach says, I can take your child out for pizza after practice and then drop her off at home afterwards, that's not okay.
Right.
So when they're doing more than they should be, I call that the relationship boundary, when it's going out of bounds.
Right.
Then you start scaling back. So, you know, if your next door neighbor has no kids of his own, but he's always asking your child to come in and play a game, ask yourself why. And, you know, you can trust the ice cream man, but if all of a sudden your kid has free ice cream every single day,
right.
Ask yourself why.
Right.
And then keep an eye on and monitor that relationship, because that can be a grooming trick.
Right. And I think, too, on the example of the soccer coach, Now, on the other hand, he's taking all the kids for pizza and he's dropping them all off.
Right.
That's different.
It's a little different.
That's
that
different.
Makes sense.
Yes.
Oh, we're going out for team pizza.
Right.
That's one thing.
Yes.
But, you know, when the soccer coach says to you, your kid is the best one on the team, and so I want to reward him with a special outing, just the two of us, not okay.
Right. Hey, Patty, we have about 5 minutes left on the show, and a couple more things. I have another listener question I'd like to get to, but I have one more question for you, and maybe we can make it brief. You often hear about a child being abused for a long time before they come forward to disclose something. How and why does this happen?
How and why does it happen? Because kids have not been taught that it's okay to tell. If kids haven't been taught about thumbs down touches and that it's not their fault, then they will keep that secret. And abuse statistically will go on for about 4 years before a child finally discloses.
Oh, wow.
So part of what we need to teach our children is that if anybody touches you in a way that makes you feel yucky, it's always okay to tell mom or dad. And if you can't tell mom or dad, tell another safe grown-up, like the teacher, your school nurse, your favorite auntie, someone else, but just keep on telling. Kids
right.
don't tell because they're afraid to. They
okay.
think they're going to be blamed, they're going to get in trouble, or you're not going to believe them.
Well,
our message to kids is tell, tell, tell. It's okay to tell.
Yes. Well, I have a solution for that real quick because I know we're for time purposes. See, Patty, if they all knew the Super 10 safety rules, we wouldn't have that issue, right?
That's right. That's right. And that's why I call my Super 10 safety rules and my system of teaching kids a system that works. Because it's all interconnected with communication and thumbs up and thumbs down behaviors.
Right. So let me hit this last question. So we've got 2 minutes, and I don't know if we have enough time to answer, but the abuse aspect is very needed, a very needed discussion. But can we, but can be a tricky one. Several years ago, our school began training for all our teachers what to look for, how to assess signs of abuse. We had several kids who were overly hyperactive. What could have been presumed as abuse, for example, bruises on the leg and arm were actually from jumping and running and constantly falling down from bumping into things. Giving all the ADD, ADHD children, what children deal with in school, do you feel there are some cases of this nature these days to get misdiagnosed or misread?
Yeah, sure.
Yes, yes.
You know, kids fall. They skin their knees. But what the difference is if the child constantly has injuries that don't look like child injuries.
Okay.
So there are different kinds of red marks where a kid wouldn't fall. A kid falls and hurts their knee, their shin, their elbow. They don't have burn marks on them. They don't have strap marks on them.
Okay.
If it's continually an injury in the same area, that's when a teacher or caretaker would step in and say abuse might be happening. But, you know, if a kid skins their knee because they're constantly falling because they're a little klutzy, that's different. And we do have to pay attention to that. And there are behavioral signs as well
right.
in a child who's abused.
Well,
which won't be there if it's just a kid falling.
Thank you. Well, Patty, we want to thank you for your time today. And as to our listeners, once again, this was Patty Fitzgerald. Safely Forever After is a company that she founded. And her website, if you want to go to the website, some good information and materials there, some books that she's written. It's www.safelyeverafter.com. Once again, that's www.safelyeverafter.com. And
right. And they can email, ask questions, call anytime. I'm here to help.
All right. Well, Patty, thank you once again for your time. It's been a pleasure. And this is Answers for the Family. And I'm your host once again, Marvin Smith. Thank you.
Thank you, Marvin.
Thank you.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza right here on LA Talk Radio.